That boy lives inside his heart. That's a mighty big place to live.
That's right. We watch Sling Blade this week on The Movie Gap, the podcast that has you scream. Welcome to this week's episode of the Movie Gap. I am your host, Chase Austin. As always, the young boy that I keep in my back shed in a little hole in the ground, Bryce Perkins.
What's up? You didn't say what direction I'm in today.
Oh, yeah. You're on my left.
There you go.
I also should mention that you're my son. I'm not just keeping a boy down there.
Yeah, you should definitely mention that part.
Yeah, that's what makes it wrong.
Yeah. So, yeah. Hello. Hello, everybody.
And we're also joined this week by a very special guest, Mr. Aaron. And I forgot your last name.
Michaels.
Sorry.
Welcome to the show.
Bryce, you want to do a better introduction than that?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Should have just done this to start with.
I thought that's what you said you were going to do.
Oh, okay. we are joined today by a very special guest, Mr. Aaron Michaels. Hello, Aaron. How are you?
I'm good. Hi, friends. I am doing pretty good. I saw this movie and it was... It was a movie.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Aaron, before we get into it, we'll introduce you to the crowd or to the audience here, even though you are already a fan favorite, as that goes. But just so people know a little bit about you, we met at Station Theater. Is that correct?
Yes.
Doing some improv there, and then you're also very active in the stand-up scene around Houston, right?
Yes, sir. I am not only ha-ha funny, I'm also ha-ha queer.
Yeah.
So, funny queer, whatever that movie line of movie was.
Well, Aaron, that is a very offensive way to put that. Okay? So,
did somebody tell you that? Did somebody tell you that?
You learned that, didn't you?
Yeah. I was just watching you.
John Ritter. a little known fact for the people out there watching, we had a very short-lived another casualty of the pandemic. Sadly enough, we had an improv troupe that I hope gets picked back up, but we'll see about that, right?
Fumes. Fun story. We were doing a improv battle. It was me, Bryce, our friend Cole, Maggie.
Cole, who was on the show as well.
Oh, yeah.
You guys will remember him, Cole Triplett.
And we had a battle against Bryce.
Yeah. Bryce
beat us.
I still feel, I wish I would have... It was literally the only time Fumes got to perform live, and I didn't get to do it because I was with a good buddy Toscano. Shout outs to you, David, if you're watching. He had asked me to do it with him, and then Fumes decided to also join, and I'd already agreed to do it with him, and so it was a battle of the ages, the most talked about feud of the time. It got real ugly on social media, but I'm glad we were able to persevere as friends through it all, Aaron.
Yeah, no, I hate you. You're a traitor, and you should die.
Okay, fair enough.
That's why we brought him on. We got to get some of that podcast beef going.
Yeah, we're going to squash the beef before the end of the episode. Does that sound
Or we're going like to pot plan? That beef and eat it.
Oh,
potted meat,
potted beef.
Bring it back to the movie.
Yeah, all right. That's right.
food in this movie. The biscuits and mustard. Did y'all catch that?
Oh, yeah.
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 It is biscuits and mustard.
That was real gross. And he liked it. That was his thing. It was what he was, it reminded him of the good parts of his childhood.
It was the largest jar of mustard I've ever seen in my life.
And he made the most noise at the very end getting it.
Well, no one was going to hear him.
Nope. He cut him right through the medulla oblongata.
That's right. Different movie, but close enough. Said, could be in the same universe.
That was in the song. The song that
I thought you were talking about
medulla oblongata.
I thought you were talking about
You don't have to. You don't even see the dot dot dots. It's just where the singer decides.
Yeah, yeah. I thought you were talking about Waterboy, which now I'm thinking this is in the same universe as Waterboy.
Yeah,
and Forrest Gump, but we'll get into that. Yeah. Because they both play football, and they're both really good at it.
This is just in the football universe.
Right. Okay, so. That being said, Aaron, is there anything you want to, you got plugs, I'm sure, you want to get out there for the people to follow you and all that good stuff, right? So go ahead, give them your plugs, tell them where they can find you.
I'm probably most active on Instagram at this time. So Michael's Aaron, Aaron is A-R-R-O-N. I am currently not doing anything because of the pandemic. I don't know if you've heard this or not, but... Shouldn't be going out to bars without being vaccinated. That's my stance. And but as soon as I finish, I'll be posting on there about shows and everything. So
hell yeah.
I'll be there. Sure.
Sweet.
Hell yeah. Okay. And then also real quick, you can follow us at at the Movie Gap on all social media platforms. Also, you can go to
crossthestreams.com.
CrossTheStreamsMedia.com?
Yeah, CrossTheStreamsMedia.com.
Okay.
You can find all of our socials there. You can find all of our episodes there. We're also, obviously, on all the other platforms that you get your podcasts on. And on YouTube, if you haven't been checking us out. Our episodes are on YouTube. They usually come out a week or so after the other episode, the podcast episode. So check up on that. And we got a Patreon up there. It's all on Cross the Streams Media. Merch to come soon, if not already. So, exciting things.
Comes out. Yep.
Yeah. And while you're at crossthestreamsmedia.com, check out our sister podcasts. There's quite a few of them. Three Beers and a Mic, Secondary Heroes.
Burn Appetite
is a brand new one that's launching on the network.
Yep. And Aykroyd.
Our friend Scott, both of his podcasts are on there, as well as Clint, who was on a few weeks ago.
That's right.
With the Four Dorksmen. So check all those out. They are worth your time.
And quickly, we would be remiss not to mention our sponsor, New Look Home Improvement. They provided us with the soundboard and microphones for the show. So thank you to them. If you're in the Houston area and need any home remodeling or improvement, go look for New Look Home Improvement, 281-620-8077. Ask for Joey. He will get you set up and going. So big thanks to them as well, as usual.
He was just checking in us earlier.
That's right. Yeah, we just got to speak with him. He was ready. He's ready he's ready to remake your homes to the home of your dreams. So go check that out.
Now that all that business is out of the way, let's get into the neat. The knit and grit of this film, Bryce.
Mm-hmm.
You had never seen Sling Blade.
That's correct,
Aaron. I am understood that you had never seen it either.
I had not.
All right. Now, this one has been on the list for a while. It's a personal favorite of mine as far as movies go. I really appreciate a lot about this film, and that doesn't mean that everybody does, so that's why we do these things. Bryce, it's been on the list since the beginning, I believe.
Yeah,
One of the first 300.
Yeah, right, that we threw on there. Through. Yeah, that's right.
So we decided to do it. Why had you not seen it before?
I don't know. I think I was maybe just too young when it came out. Mm-hmm. I was only like 8 or something. And I remember my mom and stepdad watching this and both loving it. And then I remember the aforementioned Joe, he would be doing the Sling Blade impression and stuff. Oh, yeah, so yeah. Yeah, like they watched it, I guess. It was just yeah, at the time the subject matter they felt was too old for me, and then I forgot about it.
Yep.
So, you know, that's about it.
So what did you know going in to this thing?
All I knew was that Billy Bob Thornton played the main character, and that he talked.
And you liked the way he talked.
Yeah, and I liked the way he talked. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Aaron, so you had never seen this before. Had you heard of it at all, or did you have any connection to it?
I've heard of it. For some reason, I've always thought it was a Western. So okay. I was pretty surprised. I didn't know Billy Bob. Billy was in this movie. I knew it was like his project,
yeah.
But not. That's pretty much all I knew from it. So, and I don't know why. I was just young, and then again, I also forgot that it was a movie.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember this was one. You know, because it doesn't get a lot of play on TV, and I don't think it ever has. I mean, it's, you know, kind of an art house sort of,
sure.
And not art house, but it's a smaller independent style film.
Yeah.
And it was very independent, but, you know, so it was never on TV, and I always wanted to see it. And, you know, back in the day, you had to go to movie stores or, you know, rental places to get it, and they didn't ever have it because it was smaller. So I finally saw it when I got to college, and I got my own Netflix account, and that was back when you had to rent the discs, and they got sent to you, you know? So this was one of the first ones on my queue. I remember that.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And then in my freshman year, my first semester of my freshman year, I actually met Billy Bob Thornton.
Oh, yeah. Please let us know. Tell us about this.
Yeah. So a friend of mine was related to him in some way or another. And this guy was kind of a douchebag and a liar. So I didn't believe him.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, he's in town. Let's go meet him. I was like, all right, how far is this going to go? Yeah. You know, like it was like.
And why Billy Bob Thornton, yeah, of all people?
It was very much like the Seinfeld where George tells Susan's parents that he's got a place in the Hamptons.
Yeah.
He's like, horses, Prickly Pete, you know?
Yeah.
And like, they know he's lying. So I'm just sitting there like the same way where I was like, all right, we're going to go to Austin. All right. How far down the road to Austin are we going to get? We got all the way into Austin. We parked at the Driscoll and I was like, this guy is committing to this. We get in the elevator on the Driscoll and I was like, when is he going to like fake us a phone call and be like, oh, he decided not. We get all the way up to a door. We're knocking on a door in the Driscoll. And I'm like, who the fuck's door are we knocking on? Yeah. When is this going to be a lie? And it was this woman that answered the door. And
it was Angelina Jolie.
No, it was not. This was way after. Way after that. This was in 2005. So I'm old, but I'm not that old.
Gotcha.
And
were they before that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And,
oh, wow.
So anyway, this woman knocks on the door and I'm like, oh, we just interrupted some random person. And he goes, oh, you know, I'm, what's his name? And then he's like, I'm here to see Billy. And then he came out.
Wow.
Like hung out.
And you got to actually hang out with him. Huh,
yeah. He's a really, really cool guy. We talked a lot about, you know, I was a theater major at the time, and we talked about acting, and he had some interesting things to say about live theater. And you know, his main thing was that he hates like celebrity stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, he was just like, I mean, it was mostly just talking. Like he was just a normal dude. He did not, you know, you could tell he's from a town like is in this film.
Oh,
That's what he grew up with. And that's what he's familiar with. So,
isn't he from Texas?
No, he's from Arkansas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Much like Bill Clinton. How about that?
And my dad actually was born in Arkansas too.
Your cat?
My dad.
Oh, okay.
Not my cat. I don't have a cat.
This is what we do now?
Yeah, this is what we do now. I rescued it.
Yeah.
rescued it in Arkansas.
Yeah, right. Well, that was a good name drop, Chase. Very good. Yeah. So moving on.
It's a lot better than like, oh yeah, I met that person when I saw them perform at Bumper Shoot.
Yeah, right, yeah. It is a more legit meeting than you meeting Danny Boyle, I will say that.
Yeah, well, I just ran into him at a bar, and he was like, go see my movie. And I'm like, okay, I'm drunk.
Oh, that's so good. Just like, meeting a famous person, and they take the opportunity to plug their shit, you know? All right, but anyway, you know, well, that is actually really cool. I'm glad it's so relieving to hear that he's just kind of a down-to-earth dude, but he seems like he would be.
Yeah.
with his own eccentricities.
I think he's got
eccentricities.
I think he's got some pretty, you know, he's a little OCD.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but yeah, he was nice.
All I know is that he does not lug his drums into the studio at 6 a.m.
That's what I've heard.
So to play live on the radio. I do know that for sure.
Well, and like, why would you?
Right. Well, that's
let's
fair.
Be honest.
That's fair.
Specific. I don't think anyone would do that.
Yeah. Okay. So fair. So we are all on his side on that. Okay. Good. Good. Yeah. Well, that's really cool. Shall we just kick this baby off then?
Yeah. Aaron? Let's go and do it. So,
you want to do us the honors?
I noticed that you are far more prepared than my co-host ever is with his notes. He has paper notes and they like rustled in the wind. Your first note on there is Billy Bob Thornton.
No, it's Billy Bob directed it.
Bad haircut. That's my first.
Yeah, that is
ugly haircut.
Oh, that's awesome.
Opening mouth breather, transphobic dick. Sitting next to Billy Bob. That was my first note.
Wow.
There you go.
I thought he was a doctor. So we start the movie in a hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought he was like a doctor just being really dickish. Apparently that's, I guess, a patient.
The other guy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that creepy guy he's in there. I don't know if we're supposed to think that he's in there because he actually did those things or if he's just one of those guys who is in there because he's mentally unstable and he just made up all these things about.
Well, but it is a correctional facility for
criminally insane.
Criminally insane people. So he probably.
But yeah, that
did.
Guy sucked.
Well, and
that guy's the worst.
I love that actor, though.
They used him as like a bait and switch, though.
Yeah, they did. Because you knew that the girl was coming in to interview a murderer who was getting out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was like, you know, that was well done, you know, screenwriting, even though you kind of saw, I mean, the only reason I saw it coming is because I knew the movie was about Carl, but you know, well done or whatever. But yeah, very good at being that kind of person that you just like immediately despise. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was terrible. The way he just dragged the chair.
Oh,
I was like,
boy.
Oh, this is not a person I like. This movie.
Yeah, when he started dragging that chair, I was like, oh, you're one of those guys. Oh, okay, I see. This is how it's going
to
be.
Can I say this? Is this okay to say? I'm so sorry. First off, I'm so appreciated to be here. Thank you so much. I fucking hated this movie.
that is it. All right.
Wow. We're getting the...
Hey, I welcome all opinions. I think this is great.
This is what this show is for right here. We need hot takes.
I was on 3BAM talking about WandaVision and I got jumped by everyone because I hated WandaVision. So I like to see the other side of it. I want to know what was it that you hated? Like, let's get into it. I'm excited.
Well, fundamentally, it was a good shot. It was a good movie. I can't tell you that it's not bad, like, acting. I can't tell you that it's not good cinematography or good directing. But I can tell you that these characters are the fucking worst.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They're fucking stupid. All of them are stupid. Like, there's a difference between being a good Samaritan and being a bad mom. And if you're 12-year-old hanging, like, this is my friend, this 45-year-old, no, you don't need to know more. You don't need to know his past or anything. Like, a 12-year-old should not be hanging out with a 45-year-old.
No, probably not.
Oh, yeah, that's
true. Well, and, like, you know, you also have to think about the fact that she's in this, like, abusive relationship with this guy who
is
the fucking worst. Like, he is evil.
Right.
That Dwight Yoakam's character, what was his name?
Doyle.
Which is perfect because you gotta hate anybody.
Right, Doyle.
McPoyle. Like, but you know that's kind of part of it where it's so Carl has these he's got what's called intellectual disability now, but back then it was what was referred to as mental retardation, but like all of these characters in this podunk little town are pretty dumb. Like, in fact, I love the guy who works at the gas station or the wherever
the lawnmower fix it.
The lawnmower place. Like, and all he's like, well, you got to put gas in it. And the guy's like, oh, no.
Right.
Like, well, this is broken. He goes, I mean, did you check that? He goes, no. Like, that guy's an idiot. You know, everyone is dumb. And even the even the people who mean well, like the kid's mother and Vaughn, John Ritter's character, like even the people who mean well are off, you know, like they don't quite get it. Even the doctor's a little bit it was good. I mean, it's insane that we live in a society where they just throw people out. Like, they're just like, yeah, you're better. You know,
that was wild.
And like, at least the doctor came and checked on him, you know, and you know, got him a job, got him something, as opposed to just like, here's bus fare.
Yeah.
And
right.
Now you're the world's problem.
Right. You know? Yeah.
And, but yeah, it's a weird setting. And I feel like, you know, this movie could have taken place in, I think it was probably like the 1980s. I don't really know when it took place.
Mm-hmm.
But
the 1980s?
I think it might have been the 80s. It might have made been the
in
the 70s.
Well, it was at least in 96.
Yeah, it was made in 96.
I assumed it was present day.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been the 90s. I mean, that's the thing. That little town like that, it could have been 50 years ago. It could have been tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, I feel like there's still not a lot of cell phone
service.
Actually,
the thing is that this movie was released in 96, but it actually takes place in the future. It takes place 100 years in the future.
Oh, this is a post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, this town is. It never evolves with the rest of the world.
This way. That town never had an issue with masks. They've never worn them. If it is going on
right now, exactly.
But so like it's a really interesting sort of mirror, I would say, of like this man who is, you know, intellectually disabled and all these other people who are also just really dumb and fucking ass backwards in their thinking.
Right.
You know? And, you know, even the people where you're like, you know, bless their hearts, they're like, you know, they're awful. They're just awful.
Yeah. And about the mom too, it was like that guy, like Doyle was obviously, you know, could not back up anything that he fucking said. I mean, he got his ass kicked by Frank, and she just for some reason refused to kick him out of their life.
She was terrified of him. I mean, she knew that he would beat her. Like, that's what, you know, the kid even said. You know, he's like, I wish we could just run away. That kid, by the way, Lucas Black, I know that he's been in other things since then, but he was phenomenal in this movie.
He was really good.
But, but he was like, you know, we could just run away, but she said he'll find us. And it's like,
no, I mean,
yeah.
I get all that, but why not just like, I don't know.
Well, you know, it's a... You call the cops. Well, who are the cops?
I don't want to like victim blame.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not what I was talking about.
No. Sure,
okay, that's fair.
That her son is friends with a
45-year-old man. Yeah.
I killed my mom, and she's like, "Great, I have a friend I want to sit you up with."
I also
that's another one of those like, you don't get it. I know you're trying to be sweet, but like, just because they're both, you know, slow or whatever, like, you shouldn't like just try to fix them up.
It's not,
you know, that's like the same thinking that like children have when they see like a spider and they're like, oh, that's the mommy spider, that's the daddy spider, and those are the baby spiders. The daddy spider goes to work. You know, it's just very, not everything is the same, you know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. I don't want to victim blame either. That's not really the stance I meant to take. I realize that's kind of what that is doing.
That's what it was coming off, but I knew what you meant.
There's a lot of problematic stuff about it, but I mean, I kind of liked, that's why I kind of liked the movie, because it portrayed a lot of this stuff in a very realistic way, in a way that, like we were talking about it before, Chase, where there's not a lot of close-ups. Like when that whole blow-up thing happened, it's just one shot.
Yeah, I mean, the
and you're just watching it happen.
Even, yeah, Aaron was talking about the cinematography and everything in this film is very simple. You know, where every scene is shot very much like you're just seeing it. There's not a lot of close-ups. There's not a lot of shot for shot. You know, shot reverse shot. It's like wide-angled shots where we just see the whole thing play out. you know, and specifically the mother is never in a close up. She's always, I think she might always be in the frame with someone else.
Right. I noticed that
kind of like against the wall, and it kind of, you know, shows her like trapped and overlooked. Like everybody in this town knows everybody, and they all know that Doyle is abusive and that Doyle sucks.
Right.
And, you know, should be in prison.
Right.
Basically. And nobody's doing anything to help her either. You know, Vaughn is the closest thing that she can get to somebody that can help her, you know, and even he's, you know, afraid because like Doyle is scary. Even if he can't back it up, you don't know what he's going to do.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah. And Vaughn is a very interesting place as being like a queer man in a small town. Like,
yeah.
Who's actually like afraid for his life and stuff. So, I mean, there are elements of this movie that are very interesting, like the fact that it brought out the issue with the queerness and then the abusive relationship and then like the issues that we have with our, you know, state mental institutions that just kind of release these people without any kind of help. And I do appreciate all those things about this movie that it's bringing light, especially for the 1990s.
Yeah.
But I can't. This movie was made because Billy Bob Thornton wanted an Oscar.
Well, it was actually made because so Billy Bob Thornton met Billy Wilder, who's a famous director and writer, and Billy Wilder told him, "You are too ugly to be famous." Like they were friends, and he's like, "You're too ugly. You need to, if you want to be a star, you're gonna have to write your own thing." And then star in it. And later on
Say that again. Billy Wilder
told him.
Oh wow.
That you're too ugly. You know, you're just like not right. You're not a leading man. Uh-huh. So if you want some big part and you want to make it, you're gonna have to write something for yourself and do it.
Sheesh.
To prove people that you can do things. And he was like, "All right, I'll do that." And then apparently they've talked since then, and he was like, "I don't remember saying that, but I'm glad because you're awesome." You're like,
right.
But he came up with this character when he was hold on, I have the name of the movie. It was he was on another film set where he played a train operator, and his part actually ended up getting cut. But he just started working with this character in the mirror, and like. Came up with the whole backstory about killing his mom and all that kind of stuff. And he like wrote this one man show that he then used the proceeds to do a short film, which the little reporter girl in the short film was played by, what's her name? Pretty in Pink.
Molly Ringwald.
Mm. Yeah. And then after that short film, he got the funding to make the full movie. But, it is. You're absolutely right. It wasn't like to win an Oscar as much as it was to give himself a better career. But yeah, you're absolutely right. That's why he made this movie.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest issue I have with this. They were like, "You're too ugly," and then he thought, "Well, you know who else is ugly? The mentally challenged."
Yeah,
and then he made a fucking character. That's what kind of bugs me the most about this, because it's just exploiting, you know, the intellectually disabled. Honestly, in my mind, that's what's happening in this film. I want an Oscar, and this is how you do it.
Interesting.
I talked about that exact same thing when we covered Rain Man. Yeah. And I do, Aaron, agree with you completely on that subject with when it comes to Hollywood having able-minded and bodied people, whatever is the correct way to say that, I apologize, portraying intellectually challenged people. It's gross. It's a cash grab, and it's fucking gross. It grosses me out.
Well, yeah.
This movie didn't... Me and Chase debated about this before we started. I didn't get that feeling from this movie for some reason. I did not feel like Carl's character...
I think it's a combination because of the honesty of the film and the honesty of the characters, but then also what you're talking about, Aaron, where it isn't because Billy Bob Thornton was trying to do an honest show about these backwater people, you know, for lack of a better word, that are like, you're like, this is what this world is like. He knows that world because that's where he's from, and he knew that this would be a character he could play because he's ugly. It just so happened that it was well written and well performed, and it is very real.
Uh-huh.
That I think it can, depending on how you look at it, there is a I don't know if it's a saving grace. I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but like there is something that could be learned from it,
mm-hmm.
the way that it is. But I think that Aaron has a point with the exploitation of it as well.
Definitely. I just felt like Billy Bob did a good job of making the character more than just an intellectually challenged person, though. He did a really good job of making the character have some a real depth to him and a real like beautiful soul. Like the character was a beautiful person. Other than the fact that it was sort of a homicidal maniac, like obviously
he was definitely not a homicidal maniac.
Didn't know the difference.
All on purpose. Like, kill his mother.
Yes. Right. Like, but now, did that as a child. But
yeah, he did that when he was 12.
But then he went and killed someone after he got released, which you saw that coming. You knew that was going to happen. Like,
I
as soon as he said, "Now, I guess you're wondering if I'm going to kill someone again. Well, I don't reckon I got any reason to." It's like, oh, he's going to find a reason to. And then sure enough, he did, you know. But it was a good reason. Like, if, you know, like, does anyone deserve to die? No. But in his head, he was protecting this boy and his mother that he loved. And so he did that for them.
Yeah, he was literally doing it. To prevent,
the reason was Doyle.
I mean, I think the main reason in his mind was it was less that that Doyle was going to hurt them, but it was more that that kid was going to end up killing Doyle. And like just the same way he killed his,
there's that as well, because he kept saying, like, man, I wish I could just kill him.
Yeah, and he knew that that was going to happen, and when that happens, you know, his life happens, and
not to talk like that. You're just a boy.
Anything in his life to happen to that boy.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Yeah, just Carl's character, like Billy Bob, fucking just really did a good job of making that character seem like a real person and like a real thing with real depth and real emotion to him. Like he may not have been able to express it in a way that we deem normal, quote unquote. But it was all there, and he, you know, was clearly dealing with his demons, considering the consequences of his actions when he was younger. He talked about how he studied up some on killing himself, and like that was fucking like, whoa, dude.
That moment was weird. Frank, 12-year-old, was like, "You ever thought about killing yourself?" Like out of nowhere, it's like,
I mean, this shit gets, you know, it's dark. You
know? It gets dark. Yeah, it does. But yeah, I didn't have as much problem with this character as I did with a character like Rain Man, or say a movie like I Am Sam, where it literally is straight up like, okay, this person has this
melodrama.
This difference, and here I am, this able-bodied person, just portraying them so that I can get a fucking Oscar. You know what I mean? Like that shit disturbs me a lot more than what was portrayed in this movie per se.
On the flip side of that, I feel like by this point, all these movies already came out.
Yeah.
I mean, Forrest Gump, you know, Rain Man, all these movies were already out, and I feel like he did this to prove people that he was a good actor, and he did. He showed everyone that he was a good actor.
Definitely could have been part of that.
I think it was a little bit, you know, flirting.
I mean, he was working. Yeah. He had been working on this character for 10 years, so it was before Rain Man. It was before Forrest Gump. Like he came up with this character when he did that movie in 87, and he did the play and the short film. I think the short film came out in like 94, which is the same year as Forrest Gump or whatever. So, but you're right. I mean, it still isn't anything new. You know, it's all, you know, I mean, I'm sure, you know, Flowers for Algernon is from the fucking 50s, and that's the same thing.
I don't even know what that is. Do you know what that is, Aaron?
I don't even know what that is, though.
Yeah.
No. I think the movie the movie was called Charlie. It was a short, like it was a novella about a guy who is, you know, with intellectual disability, and they give him a doctor creates this medicine that it's a shot that you get, and then you become smarter, and he gets smarter, and then he also ends up regressing back to normal. It's a
Wow.
The movie's called Charlie, and it's fantastic. But the book was called Flowers for Algernon. Algernon was the little mouse. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
That's just to say
this is it's the Flowers not, for Algernon yeah, gap.
No matter when Billy Bob came up with this, people had been playing mental
Yeah, sure,
people.
Absolutely.
I mean, Mice and Men, that was another one. That was a book first.
I was definitely getting Of Mice and Men vibes from this.
And Boo Radley from...
Yeah, right.
Very. What was it that you were saying about this movie? It was the Dark Knight...
I get
Forrest, what you're saying.
Yeah,
now.
Forrest Gump. It was the Dark Knight of Forrest Gump. You know what I mean? Is what it was like.
Like Forrest Gump is Batman, and this was like the gritty.
Yeah,
reboot.
The gritty yeah. version of Forrest Gump or something. You know what I mean? The real version or something like yeah. that is what it felt like, you know? Because I believe it came out after Forrest Gump
yeah.
as well.
Yeah, Forrest Gump was 94. This was 96. Yeah.
Because there was a lot of similarities in the at least the the way the characters not necessarily talked, but you know, they're from the South, yeah. their backstory, that kind of thing, except Forrest Gump didn't kill anybody.
Yeah,
but,
and Forrest Gump paints a different picture of the South.
Yeah, too. and it's all like happy and yeah. every look at all these amazing things that happen and this one's just like, you know, I'm literally just walking around because I have nowhere else to go. And, you know, thank God I made a friend out of this kid, but I still killed people and yeah. I'm about to kill someone, you know what I mean? It's like gritty. And then they ended up playing football, which this is the third movie we've done where there's been a sort of unnecessary sports break. You know what I mean? Twilight
yeah.
with the baseball, yeah. which was totally fucking yeah, ridiculous.
That was ridiculous.
And then Top Gun with the
baller. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. With the
no, balls. That scene was needed.
Yeah. Right, right. Yes, of course.
I feel like most of this movie was just filler. Can I say that? Like,
yeah, you can
absolutely.
Say,
the whole dating subplot was unnecessary.
I agree.
Football. I kind of see the football adding the relationship between Frank.
Right.
And,
I didn't think they would actually depict it. You know.
I know.
Yeah.
It did lead to the the whole thing of like it was a friendship between two boys because like for lack of a better
yeah,
word
sure, sure,
you
yeah.
know Frank is a child in his intellectual thing, but it also was that Frank was filling that gap as that boy's father.
I
think that you're right, and it's because it's paced and written almost and kind of shot like a play. You know, where a play is kind of about nothing. It's just these scenes that happen. You know, it's not really about the storyline or the plot. And there's a lot that you could cut that whole subplot with them dating or him going out on that date with that girl. You could cut that out.
Absolutely. I didn't need to know about her shoes.
I get it. Yeah. You know, people with intellectual disabilities can have normal life and seek romantic relationships.
Right.
But that wasn't the point of this movie. No. I feel like it was added.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, if you want to make that a point of the movie, make a stronger, aspect. It was just this weird 13 minutes.
Yeah.
And then never mentioned again.
Never again, exactly.
So when this film got bought, it was made for $1 million. And
no spoilers on the numbers. Now.
No. But okay. Miramax bought it. They paid $10 million. For the movie so that they could do all their distribution and everything, and the rapist Harvey Weinstein he watched the first 30 minutes of it and was like, buy it, we got to have this movie. And then after he found out how long it was like pissed off that he paid that much and made them cut 30 minutes of it. So this movie was originally 30 minutes longer.
Whoa.
That's too long.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, I think he had a point there. Rapist, yes, but yeah, let's cut a little bit out of this movie.
Man. Yeah.
We haven't even talked about the plot yet.
Yeah. All right, let's get back to your notes. We jump around on this show.
Yeah.
So.
I'm sorry.
No, I like it. Yeah. It's fun. It's we're having a good convo.
Okay. Sure, got a Hoochie dollar.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Hoochie's dollar store. Which the first time you hear Hoochie's and dollar, you think strip club. You know, like that's what I was thinking.
Oh, yeah,
that's great. And I was like, oh, it's just a dollar store. It's not some kind of budgeted strip club.
Yeah, right, exactly. Hoochie's dollar store.
He's carrying all her laundry and shit, yeah, too, you know. You've seen. Anyway, yeah. What else you got there for us?
So yeah, am I just reading off my notes?
Or yeah, sure. Go for your notes.
Because
like, I also wanted to go back to the first off, there was maybe 4 women in this whole movie.
Yeah, there was definitely less than 10. And I think only like 3 have.
Was there even that? Yeah.
Yeah.
But my favorite part was when the 2 students came to interview Carl.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And, you know, it is a thing, people on the spectrum, they have light sensitivity. But again, if that's a point, then make it more of a point, because I feel like that was just added in there to give some kind of weird mood lighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, I think that was just
because it never happened again.
Yeah. Because I think like, so the short film is just the interview. It's not any of the rest of it. Yeah. It's just the interview. And so I think that was like pulled directly from the short film, was this, you know, intense lighting, and he's got the light sensitivity. And then when they expanded it to this full length movie, they're like, well, we can't keep that up.
Yeah.
But why keep it in there at all? You know, other than it looked really cool.
Kind of mood lighting happening. Yeah. Then he's like, I'm in here because I killed my mom. And he, the cop was like, look at me. Do not ask him a fucking question. Do not ask him any goddamn question. And then when she asked the question, like, are you going to murder again? And the cop was just like, serious? So one goddamn thing. I told you not to goddamn fucking do. Like, he wanted to slap her. Yeah. And he was like, nah, I don't think I'm going to murder again, I reckon. Like, but the way he looked at her was just so, just, I was crying laughing.
Yeah.
He was like, the one guy, you're interviewing this murderer, this lifetime opportunity for any journalist. The one thing I fucking ask you not to do, and you're going to goddamn do it.
That's awesome.
Well, also, I love any interview where they're like, don't ask questions.
Yeah, right.
Is
this
guy Tom Cruise? What are we doing?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Don't ask anything. So then the hospital was like, bye-bye.
Just straight up. They're like, well,
they're like,
see you later. Yeah, and we hear your dad lives like, there.
Nah.
Oh, man.
He goes back to the hospital like, nah, I'm on my room back. Nah, yeah.
No, that's not how this works. I tried it out there. I didn't much like it.
Yeah.
I don't think I would either.
Right, yeah.
So he meets the boy. What's his name?
Frank.
And Frank just comes up to him and is like, hey, I don't know you, but you want to play football?
Yeah, dude.
Like, you want to help me with this? And he's like, well, I murdered my mom. And then he's like, that's cool. I like the way you talk.
This kid, he has seen enough shit that he's like, whatever. I just want to talk to anybody. I guess he has no friends, but he plays with football with all those people. So it's like... Yeah, no, he had no problem with that.
Yeah, right.
It's like, this movie is just Billy Bob Thornton going around telling people he murdered someone and everyone being like, they're just yes-anding him. They're like, good, yes, and let's play football sometime. Yes, and I have a coworker that you're just loved me. Yes, and I hate homos, and that's basically...
Right, yeah. Oh, shit.
I love my notes. It just says cocksuckers. Doyle is the most interesting character I've seen in a movie in a long time.
Oh, okay.
Let's get into it.
Yeah. We need to break this dude down here.
Yeah, he's like, you're ugly. You're fat. You're retarded. You're a faggot. I hate you. Just kidding.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, I know people like that from high school. You know,
right.
Like,
yeah, like, exactly.
You can see exactly who this guy used to be.
Right, right.
It was very similar to what he is now. But like just this like real dark, mean everything. And he's like, but I'm joking. It's like, you're not joking. Yeah. There's no joke here. What are you talking about?
Yeah, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, That's not a joke to anybody.
No.
And we know you're not joking.
And I love how he said, he goes, you know, I can't eat around somebody like that. That'll make me sick. It's like midgets and antique furniture.
Yeah.
What did antique furniture?
So ageist as well. Yeah. So add that to the list.
Ageist about furniture.
About furniture, yeah. At least. Yeah, it was just, he just pretty much didn't like, and he didn't seem to like himself either.
No, he was a dick.
You know, he had a real, therapy session when he went into his drunk rage there, kicking everyone out, and then he had to call himself to save face, and he was like, I when I'm down, he's like, I told you not to talk to me like that when I'm getting down on myself. It's like, oh my God.
Just.
This whole, very Pandora's box of fucking.
He's just manipulative.
Yeah.
And not good at it, but good at it. In that way,
right?
It's,
sure.
It's really, he's very gross.
Dwight Yoakam did a very good job of portraying this.
I mean, this guy, who knew that he was that good? He's been in what, this, and then the two Crank movies, and I think that's it.
He was in the Crank movies.
He's fucking great.
All right.
He's great in those. He was in Crank and Crank 2 High Voltage. He was the
Crank.
Yeah.
Like Christmas with the Cranks. He wasn't
Nope, it wasn't in that one. Missed out on that one. Was that Tim Allen and Tim Allen and Danny DeVito or no? Oh, that was Deck the Halls.
No, Dan Aykroyd.
Is it Dan Aykroyd?
Yeah, I think so. Right?
Oh yeah, because I think they did it.
Diane Lane.
Yeah.
No, was it?
Or was she in? Man, there's a lot of bad Christmas movies. That there's Deck the Halls, there's Christmas with the Cranks, and then there's the one with Ben Affleck and James Gandolfini.
Uh huh.
That was another one that was like that.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, Dwight Yoakam was in none of those. No.
Right, yeah.
Okay. He was in Crank and Crank 2 High Voltage.
Fair enough. And he performed on SNL one time in the 90s.
He can't get below a certain blood pressure or something, and then he'll die.
Yeah. He has to keep his adrenaline up. Yeah. Yeah. That movie is intense. Yeah. I love that movie.
Still haven't seen it.
So basically, we meet Doyle. Everything's going wrong. Bryce, did you like this band?
Okay, so this is a very good question, Aaron, because
I like that Aaron knows Bryce.
All right, listen. This is a very good question because the song, the whatever that song was they were playing, admittedly, it was some pretty fire surf rock, man. It wasn't bad. Like honestly, the fucking guitar riff and stuff. And Doyle was right. As far as live performance goes, you got to play through it. You can't just stop and tune your guitar in the middle of the fucking show. It was very troublesome.
You also can't be basically blackout drunk and never rehearse.
Apparently, if there's one thing Doyle can do, that's it. Interesting thing about the band though, the man in the wheelchair was Vic Chestnut, a real musician who was actually wheelchair bound and very talented, very overlooked and underrated. And I was actually at his last ever show. He passed away a couple weeks after. And it was honestly, I want to share this story here because I didn't realize it was him. I was watching it and it was one of those things where I was like, why does that guy look so fucking familiar? But he looked a lot younger than I remember seeing him, so I couldn't quite place it.
When did you see him?
This was in 2011, I want to say.
Okay.
Either 2011 or 2012 or 2010, one of those years. And I went with my good buddy Kyle, and it was at a church in Austin that opened itself up to being used as a music venue because it's Austin and what else is going to happen there? And it was honestly amazing because it was this, big cathedral and it was perfect for the sound they were doing. And then Guy Picciotto from the band Fugazi was playing guitar for him. And so for me, it was kind of a double whammy because I had not known Vic Chestnut very much before then. So I got to see him play live, but then I also got to see Guy Picciotto as well. And Vic played, and it was an amazing show. It was beautiful. And then he sadly, I believe, took his own life a couple weeks later. Mm. It was for any Vic Chestnut fans that might be listening, and maybe they didn't get the, maybe they weren't there, probably weren't there. It was an amazing and beautiful experience, and what a last show to, like, you know, kind of, you know, give to the world before you leave. You know, it was in a church. It was a very spiritual experience. It was very awesome. So I just want to share that. Very touching.
What's this?
Vic Chestnut. He was the one that was in the he was wheelchair. The one, the, he said, hey, he was the wind. Lyricist, or no, he was the tune man, the guy that makes the tune.
The Morris was the lyricist.
Yeah,
my favorite character.
Yeah,
no, but when did you see him?
This was in 2000 and either 2011 or 2012, I want to say.
Oh.
Yeah, it was very sad to hear that he passed, but yeah, it was an amazing show. Amazing way to, you know, kind of give before you go. But anyway,
said the name of his band was Widespread Panic. At this
was
time.
He in Widespread Panic?
In fact, they were, one of their songs was on this soundtrack.
Yeah, they were really big in Austin.
Yeah.
Wow, holy shit. That's amazing. I did not know that he was even in Widespread Panic. That's incredible. And then you also had a bearded man who was in a bunch of other things.
Yeah, I always know him from
Home Improvement.
He was one of the guys on the construction site that would play.
Yeah.
But what was
that? Morris?
Mike, he was Monty Johnson. Horace was...
Oh, was it Monty that I liked? Which one? Was there a Morris?
Morris. Yeah, he was the lyricist guy.
Yeah, Bruce Hampton. Now Bruce Hampton is a colonel, and he was the tambourine player. in the thing, but the Aquarium Rescue Unit and Code Talkers.
I was like, this guy is just straight up sitting there playing a tambourine, and yet he's making fun of the gay guy.
Like, exactly.
Oh god. Well, everyone's chilling, and then Doyle lost his shit.
Dude, real fast. Yeah. 0 to 100.
Yeah.
That escalated real fast.
Yeah. Everyone's right.
Having a good old time.
And then he kicks them all out exactly like Frank said he did the last time. He goes, "You told them never to come back here." He goes, "That's just me playing with a boy. That's what you do with friends."
Yeah, right.
You treat them like absolute shit.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
And then this worst scene was when he pushed Linda. And Frank lost his shit, and Frank started throwing all these things at him. And it's a very emotional scene. I don't want to poke light of abuse at all. But the fact that Frank kept finding shit to throw at him.
He did not stop, man.
It was like leaving the scene, then coming back with another bottle,
and
a layup.
And he had like the encyclopedias that were holding up the TV. He was going.
It looked like he actually hit him in the head at one point.
I think he did.
Yeah, I was like, ay, ay, ay. And he was really chunking that shit.
Yeah, and it went on for like a good 10 minutes of him just random furniture.
all one shot. Yeah.
You could. And that's when Doyle gets up and starts being like, you know, it's your fault for me feeling bad about myself.
Yeah, right.
Wow, what a dick.
Yeah.
Like, fuck you, Doyle.
Yeah, I know, man.
Yeah, Doyle, I get it, Billy Bob. I'm not supposed to like this character.
Yeah, that was real easy.
Yeah. Yeah, man. But you're right, though, Aaron. What if Frank just... kept coming back. he'd like exit screen, and then it's like, oh, I guess it's over. And then, oh no, here it comes again. And he's got, what has he got now?
He brings in like the cashier or the cash register from another set. He walked out the door and found something else. He's got the clacker from the backstage.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a cat keeps at one throwing point.
Shit. Okay. Is he done yet? I don't. And the whole time, fucking Doyle's just like,
please stop.
I like that they showed that he really was all talk, really, in that scene, though, that he really did get his shit handed to him there by a child, after, you know, setting up the character to be this menacing asshole, scary piece of shit. He really was just this fucking hot-headed asshole that If he really tried anything, he probably would get his fucking shit handed to him. And it's I thought it was good portraying that, because you find in life that that is often the case. You know, that the meanest, shittiest people that are the most threatening are the ones that probably would be the ones that would get their ass whooped. But it's fucked up because they are so mean, and humans generally don't want to be that way and don't want to suffer that kind of verbal abuse, that we allow these people to fucking overpower us and stuff with
even,
their
even the off-screen guy
with their bullshit.
Even the off-screen guy from when they're playing the music, like he waits until the music's quiet for a second to yell like, "Stop playing that shit!" And then Doyle goes off on. Mm-hmm. He's like, "Come on, guys, I'm trying. I gotta work." Like he wasn't. He was angry, but he wasn't like aggressive.
Yeah, right, him.
And
right.
Doyle's just like, "I play cards with so and so Junior. That's the goddamn sheriff."
Yeah,
and
right.
He's like, "Fuck, Doyle."
Yeah, right. Yeah.
This movie, man. This movie.
Yeah.
Can y'all explain to me this bridge joke? I didn't understand
it. So they have.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
All I know is that Carl's telling of it was 100 times better than Carl's, the original telling,
Carl's
of,
telling
it.
Of it. I was like, that. I turned to my wife. I goes, "That's how Bryce would tell it."
Hell yeah, dude. I fucking laughed my ass. And I turned to Ashley and I was like, "That was comedic genius right there."
The joke is like, it is that, you know, the California guy thinks he's got a big old dick because it can touch the water from the bridge. Yeah, that's a big drop.
Right.
And then the Arkansas boy, it doesn't even register him that it's that cold because he knows how deep the water is.
Right.
So his dick drags the bottom of the lake. It's
touching the bottom of the hub.
So he's got a much bigger dick than old California. Right. That's the joke.
One of them pooping? I don't get it.
Wow. One of the pooping?
I'm such an idiot. I was like, dude, I don't get this joke.
So that's awesome.
My third time they said it, I need to ask them to explain it to me.
That's awesome. Yeah, I prefer if I'm at, which I will never tell that joke because
it's not
a good joke at all.
It's not
funny. Not very funny.
It is a good joke for those characters though. Like that is exactly the kind of joke that some backwoods motherfuckers would say like that. You know what I'm saying? And think that it's the most hilarious thing in the world because all they have is trees to look at. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, yeah, man. But yeah, fucking Billy Bob when he was like, "Eh, I reckon one of them boys is from Arkansas." Oh. That's the best punchline ever. Just like say the joke, like,
well,
fuck it straight up, and then just go
two boys peeing, one thinks it's cold, the other thinks it's deep. I reckon one of them from Arkansas.
That's a great deconstruction.
But again, I love that moment because he doesn't understand the joke. You know, he doesn't get that it's vulgar either. He just knows it's funny and that she's having a rough time, and he's trying to alleviate the situation with humor.
Yeah.
You know, so like it's sweet in that, again, with that, you know, what's the word? Wow. I totally bring fun of that. Ignorance. It's like sweet with ignorance.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Innocence even.
Innocent.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was, and then we get into the whole dating thing, which
it's just awkward. Right.
It didn't need to be in there at all.
Have you, by the way, have you ever watched, it's on Netflix, it's called Love on the Spectrum. It is such a cute show. It's never so sweet. And it's, you know, people with different, you know, levels of spectrum of, what do you call it? Oh, wow. What's the
mental?
Yeah, it's
difference.
Well, they're all on the spectrum.
Yeah, they're all on the spectrum of, not Asperger's, it's the...
It's autism?
Autism. Oh, yeah, they're on the autism spectrum, and they're all people who want to date, and so they, like, kind of set them up and stuff. It's really sweet. But yeah, that's what that was, except neither of those people wanted to go on a date, and it was really awkward.
Yeah, and then we get this, we continue with this gay storyline, which is fine. I will say, I don't like in movies, and this is a big thing from back in the day, where a straight cis character is like, "It's okay that you're gay or trans. It's okay." And I'm just there like, all right. Like,
yeah.
I guess Vaughn needed to hear that he had someone on the side, but also at the same time, it's just like,
Well, and I think that it's partially that it comes from a different time, and another part that it comes from a different, like, that part of the world is not ready to, you know, even consider the fact that it's not wrong, that they have to say that it is different. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think what you're saying is, like, I don't need you to tell me it's okay because it's not okay.
Right.
Or whatever,
right.
You know, like, and I think that just comes from who those people are.
Right.
So, like, they, again, with them thinking that they're being sweet to that person, and it's like, this is part of the problem.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I wonder if,
for that point in time, cool, cute. But for me now, as a queer person watching this movie in 2021, I'm like,
yeah,
okay. Glad I have that approval.
Right.
Are we supposed to be patting that person on the back at the end of this movie? I don't think so.
You're talking about at the end when Carl told him that stuff, right? And he was like, oh, thank you, like that, right? That's the scene you're talking about?
Yeah. Okay. I think you're okay. I think you'll make a good dad.
Right. It's like, thanks, Carl. Yeah, thanks, Carl. But also, really didn't need that from you, buddy. Okay, but thank you.
Where this is coming from?
Oh, what, Aaron? If you don't mind me asking, as a homosexual man, what did you think of John Ritter's performance in this movie?
Good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's good for the 90s. I mean, I'll say that. And it's very true. I mean, that's how it is. Even now, how it is in small towns, mm-hmm. especially then, especially now for, like, you know, people who may be trans who are very scared of people finding out their identity.
I
thought that was a cool inclusion, you know? I mean,
mm-hmm.
the whole, like, his whole thought of, like, that he thought people didn't know that he was gay, and it's like, everybody knows. Like, I don't, what did you, like, was that uncomfortable, or was that, like,
no, I think what it was trying to say is that everyone knows, but there's a difference between being gay in that time. There's a difference between being gay and then being out.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
You know, like, yeah, he's funny, but as long as he doesn't, like, make it known to everyone, as long as he's not too gay, then it's fine. But I think there's a very real fear in that if he would be, like, openly holding that the other guy,
the mortician,
well,
and, like, they kept saying they kept saying, like, there was all the rumors of all the different places they had gotten caught having sex, and he's like, that's not true, I didn't do that.
This bunch of rumors, but so, I think it's the difference between being out and then being, like, out, you know,
like, active,
people knowing and then acting a certain way. None of those characters would have been okay, not even Linda would have been okay. I don't think if he was, like, fully living his gayest life. But again, I feel like all of that, you know, it's good, it's nice to have this discussion back then about being gay in a small town, but they didn't really add anything to the plot. I mean, at the end of the day, did it really continue the storyline of, or was it just another thing in this movie? I don't know.
Yeah, interesting. It's another thing in this movie. I mean, as far as plot is concerned, with that, with the gay character, is she needed a friend's house that Frank could tell them to go to. I mean, Carl could tell them to go to while he killed Doyle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, like, if she didn't have another friend. Yeah, but it didn't have to be a gay person. It could have been anybody.
Right, yeah, sure. Yeah. I wonder if it, I mean, like what you were saying, Aaron, like, I wonder if at the time, maybe it was a good thing to have that sort of acceptance portrayed in a movie like that, but was it necessary? I
do know that Billy Bob wrote that part specifically for Ritter.
They were
friends. They had worked together before.
Huh.
And that was the first other character besides Carl that he had come up with. And he wrote it specifically for John Ritter.
And as a gay man, to be a gay man.
Yeah.
Huh. I wonder why he, like, had to make it that, though.
I mean, you know, I think a lot of it is, you know, one of the reasons of having that is it's about a bunch of characters who don't have a place in this. You know, you have the abused woman who's overlooked, so yeah. She doesn't really have her place. You have this openly or closeted homosexual man in this hillbilly town where he's not accepted. So he's, you know, he's out of place. And then you have Carl, who is, you know, intellectually disabled. That's the word I keep trying to remember to use that. Intellectually disabled, and he doesn't belong. You know, you got the kid who's small. He's the runt, and he doesn't. You know,
To all come together. Yeah, yeah, I can see that.
So, I mean, it was just another, but like, again, that goes with like, why does it have to stick out? Why is that something?
Yeah.
That, you know, and is that a commentary on like normalcy of that specific town? You know what
sure,
I mean?
Sure, right. So, yeah.
Then it gets to the real meat and bones where Doyle comes back and is like, I'm sorry your mom's friends with a gay guy.
Just joking.
Dude.
I also hate gay guys and kids, but your mom had to go buddy up with two of them. It's like, well, one is her kid.
Sorry.
Yeah. He goes, No, I'm joking. Why? No, you're not. You're not joking. God, he sucks so bad.
In the room with a hammer.
just stares at him.
I know.
And he's like, I want to get baptized.
Yeah. That would, you know, honestly, that is the one time where you kind of side with Doyle. Like, why are you in my bedroom with a hammer?
Right.
It's like, okay, work. Let's get you baptized. I mean, I guess.
Yeah.
Sleep.
yeah okay, we'll baptize you. Please put the hammer down though. Can you put the hammer down first, then we'll get you baptized, buddy.
But you know what, I love any woman who at 3 o'clock in the morning is like, you know what I'm gonna do? Bake biscuits.
Oh yeah.
And not only that, she was gonna make biscuits and gravy, which is like the shit, and he was like, no, I'll just take the mustard.
Right,
the gravy's much better, dude.
What are you doing with that mustard? Is he dipping it?
He just rubs it on. He spreads it on and just eats biscuits with mustard.
And again, it's the largest jar of mustard I've ever seen in my life. I don't know what
it's like a Costco mustard.
What you need all that mustard for, but.
Did y'all think that scene with his dad was, again, I think that was just a really weird. I guess I like that scene. Where he met his dad.
Yeah, well, I think it was
Robert Duvall, of all people.
He did it as a favor to Billy Bob, and Billy Bob did it, a role in one of his movies for free.
Oh, gotcha.
But yeah, like that scene is in there because it's showing growth of Carl's character, where he was going there when he got out of the thing to like kill him.
Yeah,
like he wanted to kill his dad because his dad was so awful to him, and he realizes the difference between killing and killing is wrong, you know, which then at the end he does it for a different reason. Not, you know, he's like, what's the point in killing somebody that's gonna sit in their chair and yell at a dog that doesn't exist anymore? You know, this guy already is ruined,
right?
So, but yeah, and then that monologue that he talks with that kid where they aborted the baby, but it was still alive. And then
that was so wild. Oh,
yeah.
And that kid's just like, that's some crazy shit. It's like, yeah. I mean, that's like.
Buried it alive?
Yeah, he buried it alive in the box.
Yeah, that was weird. Because it seemed like it was a miscarriage,
It was an abortion. They said that they made it come out early.
Yeah. Oh, he said they made it come out early.
Mom and dad did something that made it come out early.
Yeah.
So they were, it was
that a was, yeah, that was
coat
wild.
Hanger. They pulled that baby out.
Oh, my
out.
Gosh.
Yeah, that's fucked.
Yeah, that was fucked up.
Yeah. And there's like, I reckon I shouldn't have done that. I was like, oh, you think?
Yeah.
Well, and again, he was like,
you think you should have buried your brother alive?
Well, that kid was, at the time, he was probably, what, 8, I think you said? And intellectually disabled, like he didn't know what was going on, but he does know this is fucked up.
Yeah.
But like, you know, he was already living in a pit in the backyard, so like, what would this kid have done if they didn't want it? Like, he didn't know what he said. I didn't know how to raise no baby or whatever. Like,
well, yeah,
like he wanted to, but what could he do?
Yeah.
But you know, even Frank was like, you should have raised him. I would have raised him.
Right.
I mean, yeah, you're eight though. Like, how do you, what are you going to do?
FAP is not, I think he should have probably, I mean, I think he did the, I mean, I was to say, but he probably should have, like, you know, did something to kill a little faster.
Yeah,
a little,
yeah right, right.
Burying it alive.
Yeah, it was his way of like, putting it out of his misery without.
What movie am I watching, like, at that point?
Right.
Yeah, it's real fucked up. That's real dark shit.
Yeah. Yeah, that got dark fast.
Yeah. Well, it was already pretty dark.
Yeah, right.
That one did feel like it came out of the blue. We were already like an hour 45 yeah, minutes in.
We were already ready for this guy's life to be like, oh, yeah. Wow, this kid had a fucked up childhood. We've already met his crazy dad. We know he lived in his dad didn't want him, and he, you know, buried him in a, or made him live in a shed like a dog. And on top of that, he also made him bury his aborted, still living brother. Ooh.
It was a lot.
It was a bit much.
Yeah. So basically now he's decided he's going to kill Doyle. And this is one of my favorite things is he's going around. It's obvious to all the people that he's going to kill Doyle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he goes up to Linda and he's giving her this big old speech about like how she loves, like how she's a good mom. And I think it's obvious to Linda already. And she's like, Carl.
Yeah, just lets him go.
Like,
Well, they all say Carl. Like, because Vaughn says Carl, and then they just let him go. And then the boy is also Carl, and then just, like, lets him go.
Yeah.
Every single one of them says that.
They all wanted Doyle to die.
Yeah.
They just didn't want
to. Yeah. Like,
you know what? This is like, for the best.
In the back of the mind.
Don't forget your jacket.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Carl, here's a tarp. Put this down first.
Yeah, me. Right.
Remember, the veins are in the neck.
Yeah.
You gotta make sure clean cut.
Yeah. Well, the only person who doesn't think he's going to kill Doyle is Doyle after he straight up tells him, I'm going to kill you. And
right.
He's like, really? And he's like, yeah.
And he was waiting to get the piece of information of who do I call once I kill you. And Doyle was just like, well, I suppose if you're going to do that, then you dial 911. Okay, thanks.
Well, he goes, yeah, tell him to send an ambulance. But I mean, if you really want to kill me, tell him to send a Hearst.
Hearst.
I like that he says Hearst.
Yeah. And if you watch it with the captions, they put quotes over Hearst. Yeah. And I was like, yeah.
I also think that was complete bullshit, like filmmaking wise. I don't know. Maybe this is just me. But how are you going to build up that this character is a piece of shit and that he deserves to die and then cut away from the murder?
Like, man, okay.
The murder. Like, I want to see him, like, get. I mean, I don't know. I don't like when they do cutaway murder scenes.
Yeah.
Especially for a bad person.
Like, so there's a couple of reasons of why you would want that. Is one, there is no violence really in the movie, you know, and it's not an act of, you know, it wasn't supposed to be a shock value thing, but I think probably the reason they cut away is they couldn't do it where it would look good. They didn't have that kind of money.
You say about violence, yes, sure, but you also deeply described an abortion scene and burying a fetus alive.
You didn't see it, though.
Tell me a little bit more than just, you know, Carl swinging a blade. Like,
well, and there wasn't even,
and also
splatter.
He was just like clunk,
yeah,
clunk, and well, no splatter.
Yeah.
But see, here my problem with it was that they had spent all this time on, even though you knew it was going to happen, they had spent all this time on like building Carl's character into this redeemed character and into this like gentle sweetheart, and you know, like, I care for this boy and his mother and I wouldn't hurt a fly, but I'm gonna go ahead and kill someone anyway and go back to the thing.
Well,
it was like, they'd spent so much time making it feel good. I thought he was gonna go kill himself because he talked about how he'd studied up on suicide.
Yeah.
You know, and that he was saying goodbye, like, goodbye, you will be happy.
That's
on
sort
the,
of what but, you're supposed
you know,
to.
Yeah, think. And then he goes and kills someone. I'm like, oh, that's kind of a buzzkill.
Well,
like,
you know, it was his superhero action. I mean, he this is the only way he
could
get.
But also, if you are going to do it, I agree with Aaron. Show it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there could be any artistic reason to not show it, but I really do think one of the main reasons you would not show it in a movie like this
is
that you can't show, like, because of how real everything else is, it would be hard to recreate that realistically and make it not look cheesy, you know?
Seemed
like to me they were building up all this momentum to this end scene, and then it was a little bit of a letdown.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I felt the same way.
It was a little bit of a letdown, and it sounds weird saying out loud, but that was the filmmaker's intent, was to build momentum.
I felt the same way.
Am I wrong with that, though? Like, you're supposed to see what's going on. You're supposed to feel the momentum happening, that he's going to kill this guy. He's going to kill them, and then it's kind of like a
It
was a small dip.
I love a movie where the bad guy gets it, and like you see, you know, like in UHF, where the bad guy loses his station, he loses all of his money. The bum who got the money bought the Rolex watch that he wanted, and he gets kicked in the crotch. That's how you like punish a bad guy. And, like, it's all on screen. Like, this, you know, it's just a little off screen. Like, you don't get that catharsis as much.
It wasn't even. And then, like, the end, well, they were just like, oh, you should call out Hearst. I was like, oh, okay. Boop. Like, that was, it was so anticlimactic.
I agree. Yeah.
Like, make more of a, I don't know, something more. I feel like I needed a little bit more.
I agree. But.
Well, and then, you know, I like the ending part where he tells that gross guy, you know, stop talking to me, you know, and the guy's like, ooh, and backs off of him. But like, one thing that I would have liked to see, and I mean, I get like, that's a good ending, but maybe before that, like, show the kid visiting. Or show, you know, like,
I know,
something like that. Like give us a little bit of hope.
Still gets visitation rights, right? Yeah,
like, you know, have the kid, you know, make it obvious that the kid didn't just abandon him in this.
Or like, cut to maybe it's like 10 years later and the kid's like older now, and he comes and he's like, Carl? And he's like, oh, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like something sweet like that, you know?
And Carl's got glasses on to show that time has passed.
Right, exactly. Because he can't lose any more hair. Yeah, right.
He's got like the Alexander. He's moved on from the Caesar to the Alexander.
Right.
Well, yeah. So I don't know. That's all I have. That was just
No, that's an interesting point. I
agree.
Really think about that.
I felt the end was a letdown as well. I felt like either let it be, you know, sappy and sentimental and feel good and just ride that into the sunset, or if you're gonna kill the guy, fucking kill the guy.
I will say, going back to music in this film, that whole montage was underwritten with like this like real grungy, rocky like guitar music.
It was more like 60s psychedelic. Yeah. Like when someone, like when they show someone put the LSD on their tongue, and then it's like with the wah pedal and
shit.
It was
like real dark, and I was like, this music is taking me out of it.
Yeah, definitely.
While he's like, flattening the blade to get the handle or whatever.
Right.
Like, I was like, why are we listening to this?
I thought Oliver Stone had taken over and was about to start showing some Natural Born Killers fucking, you know, it was just, it totally took me out of it.
And then
as well,
with that kind of music, to make your point, with that kind of music and then no visible representation of the violence.
It just, something about it was, it could have, it just needed more. Needed more zhuzh in the kill, you know?
I agree.
Does that about round out your notes there, Aaron?
That's all I got.
All right.
Well,
wrote down Billy Bob Thornton knows one stereotype about mental disability and wrote two characters.
Yeah,
there you go.
Wait, what's the other character he wrote?
The girlfriend.
Oh, I thought, okay. Well, I thought there was another movie he did that I don't know about. Okay.
He did have a brother or a cousin or something that was mentally challenged, and whose name was Carl, And so
I felt bad.
Yeah, so right. I was like,
he knew.
Well, now you tell us this.
He knew some stuff that he like. Obviously, it wasn't a biography about that that relative, but he knew some stuff about him. And then that guy actually died 3 months before or 3 months after this came out. And then the other thing was that Billy Bob knew a guy. When he was a kid, there was a boy who couldn't walk or talk well. Like, he had severe disabilities, and his parents kept him in a shed in a hole. Like, you know, he talked about him being had. And the story behind that was that the mother was scared by a snake when she was pregnant. And they were like deeply religious, so they thought that the child was like
had the devil in him, and that's why
he came out all weird.
Happy Easter, by the way.
Yeah, it turned out the kid had fucking polio. Like, it was not the devil, it was polio, and they just kept this kid and treated him like a fucking dog.
This is a true story
from where he grew up. So like these people are real.
They exist.
The stuff that he wrote about. That's why this movie feels lived in, and all the characters feel legitimate. Like, it does not feel melodramatic or over the top, even when he starts talking about, you know, burying his aborted brother. You know, it gets real fucked up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So...
Right, anyway. And then we don't even need to go into the role that religion plays in manipulating these already stupid people into doing even stupider shit like that. That pisses me off, man.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'll give him one of these. Bruce Lee, there we go. And then I think I'm good. Did that make sense to you, Aaron? Any of that I just did? Like, could not hear any of the drop or anything. All right, so now we move on to our fun and games
segment.
Our segments here.
All right, so first up is box office.
Doing the numbers. All right.
You ready?
Give me the numbers.
Oh, he's got to
give me your numbers, girl. Give me your weekend number. Give me your domestic number. Give me your worldwide numbers, girl.
I always love the guest who doesn't hear the beat.
There was a fire beat behind that, Aaron. You're just gonna have to.
Oh, it worked. Yeah.
Guess what, Aaron? Yeah. It doesn't help it.
It
doesn't help it.
It's hot fire.
I was like, who's doing this thing? Okay. I don't know what he's doing, but I'm proud of him.
Thank you.
That's the improv. Yes, and.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
All right. Okay. So the budget for this movie was $1 million. It, you know, sold to Miramax for $10
million.
Mm-hmm. I have the opening weekend, the domestic U.S. and Canada gross for the whole thing, and then I have the worldwide cumulative gross. All right?
Yeah.
So let's go with opening weekend, December 1st. A real Christmas feel-good movie, this one. Which it is in some ways, and otherwise
Oscar
it's really
season,
not.
Though, right?
Yeah,
that's literally Oscar season.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, this movie is just made because.
Well, yeah, it was. You know,
there's so many that are too, and it's another big problem with movies.
This did the festival circuit, and then got bought by Miramax, and then released.
Yeah,
and
right.
Then that, you know, to get the Oscars. So, yeah. Opening weekend, what do you think it was? I'm sure it was limited release.
Aaron, you want to do the honors here? I'll let you go first on these.
I think it did well. I think people ate this up. I'm going to say...
this is just the opening weekend, like the first 3 days it was out.
Oh, 3 days? 100,000.
Okay.
Okay. I like that. If we're going Price is Right rules, I think it made a little bit more, so I'm going to say $100,001.
Okay, well...
He chose poorly.
Bullshit.
It made $28,139.
Oh,
oh wow.
So I mean, I'm sure
Aaron, you win.
That
you
was
win.
Just that was just the opening weekend, and I'm sure that's probably like New York LA numbers. You know,
yeah, right, sure, sure.
So I will admit that the total gross that we're going into now, for its whole run, US and Canada is much higher than that. So what do you think it made total? U.S. and Canada. Aaron, why don't you go first?
100 million.
100 million.
Okay. Well, Chase, you did say it was much higher. Yeah. Price is Right rules, though. I'm gonna I'm gonna take my chances here and go $1. Whatever his name is, Drew.
Let me do the math here, and I have to say, with that, Bryce,
you have chosen wisely.
One of the few times I've won.
It did make more than $1. It did make less than $100 million.
Okay.
It made $24,444,000.
Interesting.
$121.
Okay.
No, you're off by $75 million. So even without Price is Right rules, Bryce was still $50 million closer. All right. So worldwide gross, Aaron. I will let you go first, and I will say it is under 100 million. The worldwide gross. 90
million.
I kind of actually like that number. I'm going to go... I'm going to go... 91 million.
We're playing Price is Right rules?
Yeah.
He chose... Fuck. Poorly.
This is bullshit.
It only made about 9.8 million more. It's $34 million worldwide. These movies don't you know, see a huge market. And in 96, I don't even think there was that much of a Chinese market. You know, that was like Top Gun and stuff.
Oh, sure. Right.
Started going over there. So, but yeah, no, it's still for $1 million budget, it ended up pulling in 34 mil. So that's not half bad. You know, this is a pretty big hit. He was nominated for Best Actor. He did not win.
Who did he lose to?
I don't know, but find out. But I do know that he won, adapted screenplay. The one Oscar. He's also been nominated for Best Actor in A Simple Plan, which was a Coen Brothers movie, and he did not win for that either. So this is his one Oscar. But, okay. Yeah, so that is all we got there. So it's kind of time to do the ratings.
Okay. Aaron, as the guest, and just to kind of refresh, he's getting cozy now.
Yeah.
Just to refresh, give us a 1 out of 10 on a rating on how you felt about this movie. Or maybe I'll go first to give you an example of how we do it, just in case.
Yep.
So like out of 10, bags of laundry that, a kid has to carry by himself, a fucking mile away. I give this movie, I personally give it, an 8 bags of laundry a kid has to carry. I did enjoy myself. I thought Billy Bob, did really good being that character. And I just wish it was a little more feel good at the end. I wish it would have ridden the feel good into the sunset.
Even just like having the kid visit.
Yeah, exactly. Just something. But anyway, so that being said, Aaron, give us your rating. I'd be surprised if.
Well, I didn't like this movie.
Yeah.
I respect this movie. So out of 10 things Frank threw at Doyle, I will give it 6.5 things.
Wow. All That's right. more than I expected you to give it.
Yeah. I would have rated it out of French fried potatoes.
Yeah,
if I was doing good. It. I mean, you know, I do love this movie. I don't give ratings when I've seen it. So
sure.
This movie is it's really well shot. It's really well acted. There's problematic things in it that, you know, you got to figure out one way or another if, who decided, you know, and that's for film theory. So, I have the Academy Awards. It was a big year for actors. So Billy Bob was nominated for Sling Blade against Tom Cruise for Jerry Maguire.
This show. That's right.
Jeffrey Rush for Shine, Ralph Fiennes for The English Patient.
Oh my gosh.
And Woody Harrelson for The People versus Larry Flint.
Oh wow. So really? He got nominated for that?
Yeah.
We need to do that one, by the way.
Yeah, I've only seen that once. Yeah. It was good though.
Right.
Who do you think won out of that?
It had to be Ralph Fiennes, right?
It was not. It was Jeffrey Rush.
Who the fuck is that, and what is Shine?
Jeffrey Rush, you probably know him best as...
Jeffrey Rush? Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, you know him best as Captain Barbosa.
Wait, he was the... Oh, wait, he wasn't he was the Tentacle Face?
No, he was... Oh. That's Bill Nye. Or Nighy.
Oh, not, Nighy. Not the science guy. Okay, I was not going to do it.
No, Barbosa was that. He was the bad guy captain in the... Of the Black Pearl, the one that was a skeleton.
Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah, it makes sense. Sure.
But yeah.
We'll have to do Shine, I guess.
I mean, maybe, yeah.
Okay. What other segment is there? Oh, yeah, the recast, right?
Yep.
Okay, that means we only have time for one more segment here. The...
Reboot. Recast.
Okay. Aaron, and for anyone that's listening for the first time, any of Aaron's fans that are listening because he's on, which we know will be happening, this is where we do a fucking recast. We choose people to play these characters should this movie be rebooted. We play casting director for the reboot.
Yep.
For the, what's the word? Fake reboot. So I think there's only maybe two characters to really recast in this, and that would be Carl and Frank, right?
Yeah.
Or Doyle.
Doyle, if you can get a Doyle out of there.
Right.
I will say this wouldn't get remade.
Of course.
For a lot of the reasons that
of course
that Aaron brought up and everything.
It's, right.
It's showing a line back then that we don't really... Yeah, there's no need to tow it anymore.
Sure.
So, but that being said, it's a difficult one because of that.
I mean, yeah, what are you going to do with Carl, you know, especially with the things that you just said?
Yeah.
Like, how are you going to recast that, really?
Who really wants an Oscar?
Yeah.
Leo's played.
Leo's got his now.
Yeah, he's got his, and he's played.
Does Jonah Hill need an Oscar? Does he have one?
Oh, man. I bet Jonah Hill would do it.
I think Jonah Hill would do it too. Has he gotten an Oscar? I know he's been nominated.
Yeah. No, he doesn't have one. I don't think he won.
Is he Oscar hungry, though?
No.
He's a Daniel Johnson fan.
I bet he is.
Really...
I bet he's hungry because he lost a lot of weight. And he used to be real big.
Okay, Chase. Real nice.
I can say that. I'm fat.
Okay. You're out of here, dude.
No.
Bald asshole.
Yeah, it's cocaine. Anyway,
wow. Wow, really?
Yeah, I
nice.
Mean, I don't know. Maybe let's see here. Christian Bale is too old to play that. Maybe not.
He's got an Oscar though.
He's got to be somebody that's real hungry for one. Maybe
Zac Efron needs an Oscar.
wait, I was going to say
Johnson. I'm just like wait, the
who?
Rock.
The Rock.
The Rock.
The Rock needs a...
Wow. I would love to see The Rock play Sling Blade.
Dude, that goes full circle for us, too. Wow, with how many times we use that gag fucking when we first
or
started
Tyler
this
Perry.
Shit.
Yeah.
Tyler Perry
as Doyle.
As Doyle.
Tyler Perry plays the mother, or...
Tyler Perry's Madea presents...
Madea, yeah.
Presents Sling Blade.
Madea Blade.
The kid.
Sling Madea.
The kid is played by Haley Joel Osment now.
Obviously.
But he's playing obviously. A child.
But he's still playing the child.
Everybody reacts to him like a child.
Right, right.
Although, I think Haley Joel Osment might not be a bad...
Sling Blade.
We keep calling him Sling Blade now.
Yeah.
I started it.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. No, he might be a good Doyle, though.
I would
be interested to see how he played that character.
Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah, but oh man, you know who might be an interesting Doyle? Ooh,
Alan Tudyk.
Yeah, but that's too obvious. He could do that, but I want to see
Felix the Cat.
Felix the Cat. There
wow,
some animation in there too.
Or
might as well.
You know, a little comeback story. Pepe Le Pew. He's got to reinvent his character.
I think he's out, dude. I think he's character. Full canceled.
I don't know.
I don't
you know what?
No
you know who really would play Doyle is Foghorn Leghorn.
Mm-hmm.
Or
he might be a good Sling Blade.
Yosemite Sam.
You know?
Yeah.
I say, like me some French fried potatoes.
This is, Sling Jam?
Sling Jam.
Sling Jam.
Sling Jam. Space Blade.
Space
That's
Blade.
What I call it. Okay, yeah, and then
Yosemite Sam plays Doyle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Tweety plays Frank
Jordan.
LeBron James plays fucking Carl, because, you know, he's the main character in Space Jam now, so he's the main character in this one. And then it's all settled, baby. I think we did it.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, that's a pretty good little recast. The only thing I did want to point out is I was so impressed with the kid in this movie that I, you know, looked it up who it was, and it turns out it's Lucas Black, who is still an actor, but this is his most known for. His next is Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift.
Good for
him. Yeah, he was the guy that replaced like Paul Walker and all them when they went to the Japan stuff. But you also would recognize him from playing football with Billy Bob Thornton in Friday Night Lights.
So
it came full circle on that one.
The Lord works in mysterious ways.
Yep.
I hate All right. this movie.
You know, I when Bryce told me that we were having somebody on, I was like, maybe we shouldn't do Sling Blade for just the first movie that we do.
Cole. I did this to Cole too, because
Cole was it was worse because it was Eraserhead.
Fucking Eraserhead.
Which is a real fucked up movie. Yeah.
Have you seen that movie, Aaron?
Yeah.
I bet you would have a good time with that one. Cole had not seen it, did not know what it was going to be about.
Yeah.
And then
neither did I. I mean, I knew it was going to be weird, but yeah. And it was like, hey, you know, let's have a fun time discussing a movie, you know, Eraserhead. And then it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I was like, maybe
Maybe
we change Sling Blade. Well, let's do like Judge Dredd, but then let's be honest, Judge Dredd is probably more problematic than this movie.
Shoot.
Oh,
still
God.
Never seen it. Have you seen that movie, Aaron?
I saw the remake.
The one with Carl Urban? That one was awesome.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Really? Badass. Yeah, it's Carl Urban and Lena, what's her name? She played Cersei in Game of Thrones. Anyway.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. I think that's about all we have. If you want to, you want to go give them some plugs to follow Aaron before we go?
Michael's Aaron, A-R-O-N, on Instagram. Go do that. I just restarted it. I don't do much this time, I will soon.
Tight. That's what's up. And then go follow us on at The Movie Gap at every... across all socials, and
check
us
out on Across the Streams
Media. I said it first.
.com. All of our links and socials are on there,
along with the Patreon.
Yeah, the Patreon, which is coming out,
if not already out. That's right. First tier, $50, very affordable. Second tier, $100.
For $50,
third tier, $500.
Sticker.
Yep.
Back. You get the back.
Yep. And if you follow us on the third tier, $500, you get to listen to the episode 1 minute before anybody else does. Yep. Cannot pass that up.
And for $3,000, I will officiate your wedding as Carl.
He'll just do that regardless. So, yeah. So just hit him up for that if you just want that done in all seriousness. Okay, well, thank you for joining. We only have one more thing to say, and that is
Nom in Space.